Tabura program, or an honors program in Talmud, you should know. So Thursday nights, they used to have an extra hour for learning in the high school, and then they used to sponsor for their graduates an hour, for the graduates, it was 2 hours of learning, Thursday night. So I used to teach that group, I don't think they have it anymore, for 6 years. Ran over 6 years. So he had, coming from Flatbush, where were his friends from? From Vermont. So he had heard about this, so he came. He came in about the second or third year that I was teaching this group, and he came regularly. Come on, I don't think he ever missed Thursday night for about 4 years. And I noticed, he's a pretty frum guy, pretty religious guy. All right, fine. Okay. What did he do on the side? What did he do besides Thursday night? Thursday night, he attended NYU. Why did he go to NYU? He's a very, bright fellow. I think he would have made Columbia too, right? So went to NYU, simple. His father's a professor in NYU. The professors in NYU, their children can go free tuition. Maybe that's why NYU had to close up. I don't know. At any rate, so he went to NYU, and he majored? He majored in economics. Then he went to graduate school and continued on in economics. And I see that, I don't think he was always this grim because his family isn't particularly religious. Jewish, but not so religious. And he became very religious, very religious, very religious. In fact, I think at a certain point he was part of a choral group. Exactly. He was in that chorale. He had a very good voice. He quit after a while. At any rate, very frum guy. Okay, fine. So far, so good. So I'm going to skip a lot, and I'm going to bring you up to date now with the conversation. I won't discuss his social life. That's another parsha. So I asked him, what are your professional plans? So he had just finished his comprehensives for his doctorate in economics at NYU. And he's working on his thesis. He says, what are you planning to do? He says, I'm taking courses in accounting. What are you doing that for? He says, that if you have a PhD in economics, and you also have a CPA, you can make a lot of money. No. In business firms, there are business firms where if you are a CPA and you have a PhD, you can do research in economics for them. So what? Big deal. So he says he has a friend who's doing that. He works one day a week. That day happens to be Friday. And he gets $10,000. So I say to him, so in other words, you'll be able to make $50,000 a year. He says, no. Getting the PhD in economics, going to get that CPA, also taking special finance courses. So he says, then I'll have my own time. Then I'll be master of my own time. And I know what he means. He's going to sit and learn. He's going to sit and learn all the time. Because he's been frustrated all the way back from his days in Flatbush, that he hasn't been able to learn, whether it was in the place or out of the place. And he is making sure that he's going to, no one can make anything sure, but in terms of he is professionally gearing himself, not to sort of box out our guddle in economics or our guddle in CPA or our guddle in the acquisition of wealth, He wants to devote his life to learning. And he wants to be Mekayim, the Asei Melachtecha Arai, the Taroscha Keva. You know, the Rambam describes in Hichos Tamei Torah, and we always used to sort of joke away at it, but actually, in at least there are certain professional realms where this can be done today, where the Rambam speaks about the fact that you spend, you know, for example, he talks about how you divide your time up in learning. You know, a third of your time in Mikra, when you first start learning, of course. After that, it's all in Gemara. But when you first start learning, a third in Mikra, a third in Mishneh, which means halachit, and a third in Gemara, which means analysis. Okay? So he gives an example. For example, the Rambam says, say there are 12 hours in which a person can negotiate, because the Rambam, you know, is a great belief in 8 hours sleep for a person. And he leaves 4 hours for, for personal needs and davening, I assume. Okay? He doesn't actually, the Rambam only measures out the zman of saying Kriya Shema Ubracha Yiseha. He only gives it 6 minutes. He only gives it 6 minutes. So the Rambam didn't fetch too long in davening, apparently. So the Mele... So he says, so for example, he says you have 12 hours. So he says, well, 3 hours Mikra, 3 hours Mishnah, 3 hours Gemara, and 3 hours work. Well, I used to see this around, what? 3 hours work? What was he talking about? An idealized world? Well, the truth of the matter is, if you do not have an overly ambitious society, you can do that. In other words, if you're not busy, you know, like overproducing, you say, you can do it. If you're not busy, you know, trying to satisfy all your material desires in all sorts of ways, you can lead a very simple life. And with, in a sense, certain the advancements that exist already today, and you're willing to lead a simple life in terms of who needs the fancy house, and who needs the fancy steak, and who needs the fancy this and that, society could probably work its way down to this kind of a system, because what is it? It's, according to the Rambam, really it's the way electricians work today. 3 hours a day, right? So the Rambam assumed you were working 6 days a week. So it's 18 hours a week. How much do electricians work? 20 hours. Right? So Mimele, and you know that, the way the ecologists are talking, we're going to have to come to this sooner or later anyway. Because we're going to run out of energy and we're going to become overpolluted anyway. We're going to just have to tone things down. So what do they start talking about? Dwarfing man into a 6-inch midget so he doesn't consume so much. You know, have all sorts of mutations of genes to reduce the man's size. Lead a simpler life would be the real solution. So Mimele, this is this person's vision. And where did he get it from? I don't know where he got it from. I don't know. Picked it up. You know, one of the big problems is that I too often find people who have not attended yeshivas who develop a far purer concept of the value of the life experience than boys growing up in yeshivas. And yeah, I guess there's a natural reason for it. The boys who grow up in yeshivas are... they represent a certain mass of humanity, right? And there's a natural tendency towards complacency. The boys who haven't gone to yeshivas, who have survived, are few and far between. They've naturally developed a very, you know, very fine, precise vision of things. Because very few of them have survived, and they obviously had some very special talents in doing so. I remember having another friend, also a young man, also very similar. Where did he go to school? Listen to this. For grade school and high school, he went to Fieldston. You know, Fieldston, ethical culture. Ethical culture. Canadians don't know anything about that, Maka. Then for college, he went to Cornell. Then, all right, for graduate school, not bad, he went to Harvard. Okay? The guy's extremely frum. And by the way, and this is, he's an older fellow. He's already close to 40. Close to 40. This was not in the rage when it's becoming popular to become frum. And he came from a fairly religious home, too. But how he survived it, I don't know. Be that as it may, these are mysteries that we can't resolve. What I'm primarily concerned with is, what vision are we developing of our life goals within the context of our growth? Now, Baruch Hashem, things have already reached a pass where the so-called old-time concept of synthesis is bottle and mevutel. I don't think anybody believes in it because there's nothing to believe in anymore. Why did they believe in synthesis 30, 40 years ago? You know, the synthesis of Torah and Western culture, and you create a new spiritual Superman. What happened to it? What happened to it? What happened to it was, we found out in the course of the historical experience that we've gone through, especially through the 60s, there is no such thing as Western culture. What is it? Because now what it's turned into is depravity. There's nothing left to it, because the logical consequence of Western culture has borne its fruits. So halacha lemaisa, all it is hedonism, materialism, and nothing else. And the sophisticated aspects of it are merely blinders that lead to it. So memele, there's nothing left. So memele, problems with synthesis are batalum avutl already, except I guess there are some diehard professors left around, you know, still hold from it. But otherwise, it's dead. So what's left is, all right, one goes to college, one pursues one's education for professional reasons, which is very good. Which is very good. Even a kanoi, even a stronger kanoi as... they call him a kanoi, but they view him as a kanoi. The Briskerov was asked, I know personally the individual who asked him the shaila, whether he sees any objections in going to college. And he says, as long as you don't study apikursis, there's nothing wrong with it. What's wrong with it? Just a second. That's another difference. Okay? Now, I would say most courses in the college, if you run down the list, are not apikursis. I didn't say whether the rate is 95% or 55%. But anyway, at any rate, rate is not. All right? So memele, so the goals are professional goals. Fine. The problem with this is as follows. Professional goals are very fine. Good. The only trouble is it becomes a matter of where the professionalism swallows your spirituality. In other words, where the professional goals become so overwhelming and so all-consuming that our learning just deteriorates. And let's not even talk about all the cutting that goes on. Where's Steve Rowe? He's my prime culprit. It can up whatever spirituality we want to develop in ourselves, whatever hasaga of Torah we want to accomplish, it engulfs us. But by the way, so some of you sitting here, man, see, bro, he's a victim. But you guys come on time, this and that, this and the land. You're not victims too. It's not true. Not true. First of all, you know how much better learning you could be doing. Number one. Number two is something else. What's going to happen when you leave this joint? See, what's going to happen then? So Mamele here, you've set aside 4 or 5 hours. You've set aside 4 or 5 hours in which to learn, which is great. It's really great. Because you don't know what it's like when you get out. All right? Now, to talk about medical school, whoo, that's going to Brzezinski. You know how much learning you're going to do in medical school? Although, by the way, you know who I spoke to the other day? Not Yolano. I haven't spoken to him, but I spoke to what's his name, Hurwitz. I know. So he told me, says, Rebbe, says, when I started in medical school, I could only do 4 hours. Now I'm down to 2 hours, but I'm doing the 2 hours a day, which is pretty good. It's almost as much as you do here. What? 2 hours a day of learning in medical school. Yeah. Yeah, that's the trouble is he learned all the time. Yeah, that's the problem. At any rate, but what happens is, I mean, consider any, it's not just medical school. You go to law school is, this fellow who went to law school told me Harvard Law School is tougher than Harvard Medical School, and I believe him. That's right. It says, the haravanya that goes on in law school is something gefelach. It's something gefelach. I want to tell you something. At least in medical school, you can think around part of the time. In Harvard, you got to sit and theorize all day. It's a pachai. I'm not talking about Brooklyn Law School. At any rate, and just saying, So, now, and the truth of the matter is, any provider, you go to dental school, any kind of really professional development, you go to graduate school, whether it be in psychology or mathematics or physics, these things become all-consuming passions. Sure. There's only one question. What that piece of paper is worth. What do you think it requires to get smicha here? Shanim. Sit it out. You'll get smicha. I guarantee it. You just finish the college here and go into the smicha program, and you'll get smicha. Whether you like it or not. What are you talking about? I'm talking about smicha. I'll give you smicha today. You want smicha? The solution is obvious. I didn't say that. I said, I gave this fellow as a mushel. You have to gear your thrust. I don't say that not to go to medical school. But you know what happens when you go to medical school? I'll give you an example. Then you develop fancy ideas of becoming a goyin in medicine. Now, if you want to do it, there's no crime in that either. There's only one trouble. You won't be a ben torah. You have to realize this. Yeah. Oh. Well, all right, just a second. Wait. So, very good. So if you want to become a goyin in medicine, So very good. So you want to spend your life doing gemilas chasadim. Very great. Spend your life doing gemilas chasadim. So why am I yapping here about becoming a ben torah and perhaps not becoming a goyin in medicine? For example, there's another fellow. He's out in Queens. I can't mention his name. His name's Goldstein. Do you know him? Yeah, you know him. Yeah. So what is he, a neck surgeon? Yeah. Neck surgeon. So I asked him why he wanted to become a neck surgeon. So he said, I find most neck surgeons spend most of their afternoons playing golf. You see? No, it is honest. That's all the time. Wait a second. No, my cat, he's doing it to learn. He did it to learn. But it says most of them do that. He did it to learn. Okay? Just a second. So the mice is this. Well, he could spend his afternoons doing research, right? And being a gaimel chesed. Okay, enochinami. But I'm speaking, if a person wants to be a ben torah, what he has to do is gear himself in such a way that, among other things, I'll give you a list of items. If you want to become a ben torah, you have to decide you don't want to become a goyin in any other field. You have to decide you don't want to become a goyin. Or you have to decide to be an honest practitioner of the profession. Period. A practitioner. An honest practitioner of the profession. All right? Number one. Number two. That you have to judge yourself. For example, there's a fellow now in Einstein. Who's once in my class? No, Mshinsky. No, Mshinsky, don't you? No, Mshinsky from the year before. Yeah. He was accepted to Einstein. He's now in Einstein. He worked out a deal with them, and it required a
A good deal of operation. Took a year off before I went to medical school. Think that's an easy thing to pull off? He had a sweat on it till he got it. Right? Imagine, he says, holding off a year for medical school? Oh, you can tie in Einstein, it's 3 years, so my male Sahaka will get out in 4 years too. No small thing. You know how long it takes for a doctor to finish up? Took off a year, and you know what else he told me? He's going to try to get off a year after his first year in medical school, learn for another year. You know what that means? High determination. To find nooks and crannies wherever you can, like they say, kavata itim la Torah. Another meaning for the word kavata in Hebrew. This is chassidish avot. Another word for kavata means to rob. Kavata itim la Torah. You have to know how to rob. Find time. You have to steal to learn. See, you need that. I mean, these would be the two primary things. Of course, I can always tell you, go into a profession. If you don't have any particular predilection, go into a profession that will not make such demands on you, obviously, right? Let me just end up with one final vote. Goldring says, but what if he wants to be a great Gemil Chesed? I have no time to speak. If he wants to be a great Gemil Chesed, Matovu Manoim, fine. There's only one trouble. Bamedvar Mamurim Kyashanim Kitikunai. Do you understand that profound Hebrew? Bamedvar Mamurim Kyashanim Kitikunai. When things are normal, in the sense that you have a normal, well-behaved Jewish society, right? There's only one trouble. Today, to survive religiously, not just in practice, but in hashkafe, I maintain is kimat umeglach, unless you're a bentara. Kimat impossible to survive. Because if you're not a bentara, then who do you listen to? There are a lot of rabbis, a lot of people talking, giving all sorts of deis about all sorts of things. Who do you listen to? Do you listen to the rabbi of that particular neighborhood that you happen to move in because your wife's mother-in-law decided she wanted you to move there? Is that what's going to determine your hashkafe? And I want to tell you, unless you're a ben tari, you'll have no other way of determining the hashkafe, because what other measure and what other gauge are you going to have to determine it? That's why I say, if you had, like, a certain Das Torah that was prevalent in there, you didn't have everybody fadrein you a cup with what's Torah and what's not Torah. So, Mamel, all right, so then you can be semech on that. But unless you're a Ben Torah today, you have no one to be semech on. And you just get driven along by some rabbi in the particular community where you're in, whether the rabbi's reliable or not reliable, or is or isn't, and it's a heftervel. That's the reason why Gemilas Chesed today is not as an attractive a goal, because of simple matter of survivability. All right, let's do Minchah.